Parshas Yisro. My grandfather of Schwab used to say that there are many different approaches to learning Chumash, and they're all valid. Many legitimate approaches, Shivim Panim LaTorah, and sometimes we'll spend an entire hour just on a vav or a particular word in the Chumash or a missing letter. We remember our shir on Yaakov's name that was sometimes written Mole and sometimes Choser. And that's valid. And yet there are other ways to learn Chumash. And the way we will be learning this parsha today is with a sweeping perspective of the structure of the parsha, the sequence of the parsha. As I said, my grandfather used to say sometimes a person can go on a cruise and you have one person who's spending their time every 5 meters testing the water to see exactly the chemical components, and someone else is just watching the big picture as they sail by. And what we're doing today is we are looking at the big picture. We're going to approach this parsha with a panoramic view, you might say, and we're really approaching Torah in its role as mikra, something you read. You just read a narrative, an ongoing story. And so what we're looking at today is the particular episodes in our parsha leading up to Matan Torah. So what you have is, first, the coming of Yisro with Tzipora and the two children, and the reuniting of Moshe with his family. Notice that the only Jews who did not participate in Yetzias Mitzrayim were Moshe's wife and children. And so we first see that Yisro brings Moshe's family and they are reunited. This is Perek Yud Ches 18 from Pasuk Aleph till Pasuk Yud Beis, the story of Yisro and the family coming together. Then, starting in Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Gimel through Chaf Zayin, you have the story of Yisro's suggestion and implementation, really, of the establishment of the court system, a staggered court system, so that it will be an efficient way to judge the nation and to make sure that everybody's case is heard. And Yisro introduces this whole notion of an organized court system that can that all people can find their can have their voice heard, you might say. Following this, we go immediately into Hashem's instructions to Moshe regarding the preparation for Har Sinai, which we call the Shloshes Yimei Hagbala, the 3 days of preparation, leading into Perek Chaf. Perek Chaf, of course, is the Aseres HaDibros. The entire Perek Yutes is about the preparation for Torah. And Pasuk Tes, in the center of the Parsha, Pasuk Tes reads, "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Hinei Anochi Bo'elecha Ba'av Ha'anan, I'm coming to you in a cloud, so that the nation will hear me speak to you and also believe in you forever." This is that important Pasuk that we've talked about in the past. This is the source of our trust in Moshe, because we heard him become a Navi. And the days of preparation were not just really preparation for the Jews to sit idly back and receive this great revelation. They were preparing to become Nevi'im, which takes preparation. It's not something that happens to a person as a free gift. All of Bnei Yisrael were preparing to become Nevi'im. As this pasuk says, they will all hear Hashem speak to Moshe. They will all be raised up to the level of prophets for this 1 minute, so they will never have to have a leap of faith that they can trust Moshe or that the Torah Moshe is teaching us is true. They will know it firsthand because they heard Hashem say to Moshe, "Go teach the Jews such and such." In any case, these are the three stories, the three narratives leading up to Kabbalah Satorah. Now, the ideas that we will discuss come from, again, as last week, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama Arishon, who wrote a Sefer Akedas Yitzchak. He's therefore called the Baal Akedah. And he brings to us ideas that exist in the Mesorah of the Jewish people in our philosophical heritage. Remember that before the Rishonim, perhaps beginning slightly before the Rishonim with Rav Sadia Gaon, among the last of the Gaonim, it was the first time that in our history, we have our scholars writing for us in a coherent, almost essay-like form about what we believe in. Up until this time, if you think about the Sfarim that a Jew might have had on his shelf, up until this time you have the Torah, you have the Nevi'im, you have the Ksuvim, you have the Mishnah and the Gemara, you have some Sfarim that begin to codify Halacha, because the Gemara is not an organized code of Halacha. But you do not yet have books that discuss what we believe, what our philosophical thoughts are, until you begin to have Rav Sadia Gaon, who wrote Emunot V'Deyot, and then you begin to have the Rishonim, who wrote on philosophy, like the Mor Nevuchim, Perushim on Chumash, these type of things. And in that group is the Baal Akedah, who begins to set down Jewish philosophy. And when a Rishon speaks, they are not pulling an idea out of a hat. This is deeply embedded in the Masorah, perhaps also combined with their creative approach to learning, but certainly the ideas they're presenting are part of our Masorah too, philosophical ideas. So the Baal Akedah here begins, is in Parshas Yisro, by saying that what you see here in these three episodes represent the three phases of preparation before leading to Matan, before receiving the Torah. More than that, all encounters that a human being will have in the course of their life, any area in which they will act in the course of their life, can fall into three categories. They will either be relating Bein Adam La'atzmo, between man and himself, his duties to himself, to his soul, to his uniqueness, to his being a creation of God. It's similar to Bein Adam L'makom. Or they will be relating Bein Adam L'mishpachto, to their closest of kin, to their family, which is governed by a particular type of law and rule. When I say law, I don't mean a imposed law, but a natural law. And then if they're not relating to their family, to their closest of kin, then it's been Adam L'chavero, between man and society. All man's interactions in life, in fact, all of man's choices and behaviors either fall into one of these three categories. Okay, they either fall into between man's responsibility to himself, his family, or the outside world. The Baal Akedah says that you see these three relationships being put into place before we can receive the Torah. Yisro comes and reunites Moshe with his wife and children. This is the establishment of the proper framework for Ben Adam L'mishpachto, that man with his family is intact. We will discuss further the guidelines, how one conducts themselves with family. Then Yisro sets up a court system so that the framework for Ben Adam L'chavero is intact, how one must conduct himself with those that are outside his little group that he feels a natural bond of loyalty with. And beyond that is the Shlosha Simei Hagbala, where man must think about his responsibilities to himself. He must think about his responsibilities to his Creator, who expects something from him, who put him on this world. Privately, he thinks into his own heart about what is demanded of him as opposed to somebody else. That has been Adam L'makom, or you might call it Ben Adam L'atzmo, between man and himself. That's the 3 days of preparation. Men and women separated. Everybody was doing their own personal introspection, was on their own personal journey. And so the Baal Akedah says that these three relationships must be in place before we can begin to think about receiving the Torah. Now, what rule governs each of these relationships? What are the guidelines that we must keep in front of our eyes as we interact in either of any of these three particular types of arrangements? So Baal Akedah quotes a pasuk from Micha, Perek Vav Pasuk Ches, which is in the context of the Jewish people kind of asking, what can they do? How shall they come before Hashem? With what type of offerings shall they present themselves before Hashem? And the Navi answers the following. Pasuk Ches, Higid lecha adam matov. He has told you what is good. Uma Hashem doresh mimcha. And what Hashem expects from you, is seeking from you, demands from you. Kiyim asos mishpat, nothing but to do justice. Va'ahavas chesed, and to love kindness. Va'tznea leches im Hashem, va'tznea leches im Elokecha, and to walk modestly with your God. So the Baal Akedah says these three guidelines kind of set for us the framework of how to behave within each of the relationships. asos mishpa, to do justice, governs ben adam l'chaveru. Avas chesed, to love kindness, governs ben adam l'mishpachto. Vatsneya leches im elokecha, and to go modestly with your God, governs ben adam l'atzmo, between man and himself, between man and his soul. These are the guidelines. We're going to discuss each category. But we have to know that these guidelines, these three types of relationships, which take over every single aspect of our lives, anything we do at any time fits into one of these categories. And we have to know that these categories are governed by certain rules, as we've said, but the proper alignment of a person within the category, the fact that the person is relating properly, is not just a psychological achievement that they're properly, you know, they're behaving properly in every particular situation, they have the right approach to their friend versus their family versus God. These are the pillars that the world stands on. We say in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Ches, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Kayam. Three things maintain this world. Al Ha'emes, Al Ha'din, V'Al Ha'Shalom. On truth, justice, and peace. Shenemar Emes U'Mishpat V'Shalom Shiftu B'Sha'arechem. These are the governing rules. So, you can apply them to these three categories. Din is clearly Ben Adam L'Chaveru. Emes, Ben Adam L'Makom. And Shalom, Ben Adam L'Mishpachto. Now, this is not exclusive, of course, there's Shalom Ben Adam L'Chaveru and Din Ben Adam L'Mishpachto, but in general, we will discuss now the breakdown, these three guidelines for each of the particular relationships. Starting in the order of the Parsha, Ben Adam L'Mishpachto, reuniting of Moshe with his family, bringing them back together. The very notion of a family unit was something that was novel to the Jewish people. Coming off 200 years of slavery, where the bonds between a parent and a child are not regarded by their slave masters as of any value. The slave master has no problem separating parents from children, wives from husbands. They have no regard for a family unit. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins to punish the Egyptians with the Makos, and he separates between Egyptian and Jew, he keeps telling Moshe that in the end, there's going to be that great Makah that's going to just, that will be the, you know, the pinnacle, that will be the event that will demonstrate forever after that Hashem is the God, that will be the birth of the Jewish people. What did the Jewish people have to do to prepare for that great event of Makos Bechoros, where they would be born as a nation? So the rules are, they had to gather for in their family units and go into their homes and close their doors and sit together as a family, and they had to put the blood of the Korban Pesach on the inside of the doorway, not on the outside. Hashem needs no siman who's a Jew and who's a goy, who's a Mitzri. The door, the blood of the Korban Pesach was in the inside of the doorway for a sign, as the Pasuk says, for themselves, that the fact that they slaughtered the Korban Pesach indicates what their values are, that they are now submitting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This Korban Pesach represents their submission to the one God. They put the blood on the doorpost to look at it as they sit there together as a family to strengthen themselves and say, this is what we believe and accept and dedicate ourselves to. And they must begin to develop their nation on the basis of the notion of family, that the family is sacrosanct, that the family is the beginning and the core of the strength of the nation. And all good values are taught in the family. The family is the training ground. Where else should someone learn not to be selfish, to be generous, to be loyal, to go beyond the call of duty, if not within the family unit? If a person doesn't learn it with their siblings, they will never be able to express it out there with their co-workers and their co-citizens. We learn these values at home. They form the core, the bias. The house becomes the center and the sanctified place, the fortress. So the entire Jewish nation begins with the establishment of the notion of family. The family is the core of the nation. Now, how does a person relate to their family? Is it the, are the rules that govern a parent's behavior to their children legislated by the courts? In other words, does every parent, when they have a child, sign a document that I will not turn the heat below 59 degrees, you know, between November and April at night, and I will keep the heat? You know, we don't, it's almost intuitive that the bonds that naturally connect a parent and a child or siblings are such that it is not necessary to legislate legally how one must behave, what privileges or rights one must grant to other members of the family. It's the natural bonds of loyalty. And that's why Micha, the prophet, says, Asos Mishpat, to do Mishpat, which is to behave in a certain way. But regarding Avas Chesed, which applies Ben Adam LeMishpachto, it doesn't say to do Chesed, it's Ahavas Chesed. A person loves the relationship they have. He loves his parents, his children, his family, his relatives, so that the Chesed comes natural. It's Ahavas Chesed. It's a love that breeds Chesed. It's not something legislated. We need to define Chesed in general to understand that it's not something imposed upon us from the outside. There is a difference between Chesed, say, and rachamim. Notice that you can call a person a mirachem, is a person who has the character trait of rachmanus, but you cannot conjugate the word chesed. There's no mechased. There's no chastus. Or chasad, right, we say a person, there are chasadim, there are acts of chesed, but you cannot make it into some type of adjective. Because chesed is not a result of some relationship with another person. It is not generated by another person. It does not start with another person. It has nothing to do. It exists by itself as an absolute. In other words, rachmanis is the feeling we have when we see somebody, nebuch, who doesn't have legs, and they're asking for money, and this stirs some compassion within us, so we respond with help, money, a smile, whatever it is. This is not chesed. Chesed is an overflow of loving kindness that begins within a person, erupts, bubbles out of them. They cannot stop it. They cannot help it. And everybody who happens to be around them is the lucky, you know, beneficiary of their largesse. In other words, Olam Chesed Yibane. What do we mean when we say Olam Chesed Yibane? Are we talking about the way Hashem conducts the world with the Midas Chesed? It doesn't seem to be. We are saying Olam Chesed Yibane. He built the world off Chesed. He's not talking about how he conducts the world. That's separate. That's the Midah of Chesed. To define Olam Chesed Yibane, we have to understand that Hashem is the ultimate Baal Chesed. He built the world with the Midah of Chesed, which is a self-starting, absolute character trait that exists within Hashem. And because Hashem was full of Chesed, and we said it's an overflow, of loving kindness, he needed someone, some people, he needed some creation to receive all of the kindness that Hashem wanted to give. So he created people as kelim, as vehicles, as vessels that can receive the kindness he wanted to give. The creation of people is just the result of the need for the Baal Chesed to have someone to express their Chesed to. What we mean is this. You can have a pitcher filled with water, and you can have many glasses, and you pour, and soon the pitcher is empty. So that's Rachmanis, perhaps, or that's be doing good deeds. But what about a pitcher that's sitting under an open spigot, and the water keeps filling the pitcher, and it's overflowing, and people come by and put their glasses or their cups under the overflowing pitcher? So as the pitcher is the water is overflowing and everyone is benefiting, the pitcher is never depleted. This is the model for chesed. How do you get there? How does a person feel like that? Where does it come from? Chesed is a result of a strong sense of gratitude, of Hakara Satov. That's the formula. When a person feels gratitude for all of the free gifts that Hashem has bestowed upon them, their life, their health, their children, their wealth, their talent, their brains, and even those who are not blessed in every area, often find many reasons to be thankful for life itself, for opportunity. We know, unfortunately, that it's not those who are blessed with the most things that are the most grateful. It's not how it works. Gratitude is a development of a mindset with thanks Hashem for the opportunity to live and to have chances to serve Hashem in whatever the situation. When a person is overflowing with the sense of the free gifts that have been bestowed upon them with gratitude, they cannot help themselves. They must just let their happiness overflow. Look, you never hear this. I'm so thrilled. I'm so happy. I just won the lottery. And my 50-year-old daughter is getting married. And someone who was deathly ill is having a refuah shleima. I'm so happy. Hold all my calls. I'm locking myself in my room. I don't want to speak to anyone. I want to celebrate by myself. We understand that when someone feels that they are the recipient of so much bracha, that they cannot stop the overflow, and they naturally include everyone in their simcha, they are generous, there is a largesse, there's a largeness of spirit, and this is the core of chesed. It is, if a person wants to feel themselves to be more about chesed, then they must work more on their gratitude to Hashem. Otherwise, they're the pitcher that pours and pours and pours and eventually is empty. So chesed is the natural feeling that is meant to define our relationships with our family members, the closest of kin, relatives also. A sense of the great benefit we get from the closeness of family and the appreciation of the gifts Hashem has given us, and even taking into account that the particular family Hashem has put us into with its particular challenges is very well designed, custom designed by Hashem. When a little baby is conceived there in the womb of a woman, there's two partners, the mother and the father, but the third partner, Hashem, needs to choose a neshama from all of the neshamas in Shemayim to implant into this little embryo. And Hashem does that with a cheshbon, with a particular calculation, so that when a person is born, they are expected to understand that there is a shidduch here between the contribution of the parents, which is the physical body with all of its talents and abilities, etc., the contribution of Hashem, which is the neshama. This is a zivug, this is a shidduch, and to appreciate whatever their challenges or circumstances are, that this is designed by Hashem, and all HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do is see them do their best in this situation. So family becomes the arena in which we express our chesed, our hakaras hatov, and it's not legislated. It's ahavas chesed, loving love that leads to chesed. However, this is not the only relationship a person has in their life. There's also the relationship with ben adam lechaveru. The next episode in the parsha is he sets up a court system. This is legislating, ruling the relationships between man and his fellow man. And it functions on a different basis. You cannot expect a person to extend those bonds of love and loyalty and trust to every outsider. And so the way we conduct ourselves with the outsiders is governed by minute legal, you know, by a legal system that is very specific down to its minutest details, down to a pruta, rights and responsibilities, torts and damages. Each person's space that cannot be infringed upon, that they have a right to defend, ben adam lechaveru. And that's why Micha, the prophet, says, asos mishpat, do justice. We don't care whether you want to or you don't. We're not concerned with the emotions behind it. To be part of a society means to do justice according to the law. Now, we're talking about business. We're talking about not just business, but respecting, as we said, the territory, the rights, the ownership of another person. We're even respecting the family bonds of another person. The Jewish people are the ones that introduced to the world the notion of the rule of law, that all people are equal under the law. Notice the little battle, the little altercation here between Yaakov and Shechem. What happened? Rambam says in Hilchos Malachim that the reason they were all chayav misa, the whole city, and the brothers acted within their rights, was because there are sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach. And one of the sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach is that they have to set up a court system. They have to conduct their affairs within a legal system that takes into account everybody's rights. And when Shechem, Hamor, kidnapped Dina, which is prohibited according to the laws of B'nai Noach, according to the Rambam, nobody stopped them. And so they're all guilty, which means to say the following. Remember also Sodom. Shali, Shali, Shalach, Shalach. They had a legal system among themselves. The difference between an advanced society and a primitive society is this transition between familial bonds and societal bonds. Primitive societies are bound by familial bonds, clannish societies, clannish groups, family groups, where they are family. So as we said, they trust each other, they're loyal to each other, they help each other. But anyone outside of the clan is not subject to any justice. To the other, they can do whatever they want. So within Shechem, within that city, they perhaps had a legal system that governed themselves. But Yaakov and his sons and Dina was an outsider. And therefore they can do anything to the outsider. The outsider does not deserve any protection or rights. And so they kidnapped Dina, which is prohibited to them. Therefore the brothers are right, Rambam says, legally justified to kill all of them. Because they did not stop this from happening. Which means you cannot make a distinction between the clan, and who you treat correctly because you act with them with love, avas chesed, and the outsider who deserves no rights and is not protected. Primitive societies are organized around those type of groups. Till today, in the Arabian Peninsula, all over Iraq, they protect each other. They're clannish, warlords. They have their own little group. They're all the same family. And everybody else is an outsider, and they fight each other all the time. There has to be a transition between the family and the outsider who is governed by the rule of law, who then doesn't have to depend on the family ties to survive, but can trust society in general, because all of society have adopted for themselves the rule of law. So they can trust the general community, and they do not have to seclude themselves with their clan to assure their own protection or their survival. Do you remember what Shechem offered Yaakov? Join our group. We'll give you our daughters and you'll give us your sons or whatever, vice versa, right? Join our group. Live among us. You could do business with us. We'll take you in. They didn't accept that offer. That's not an acceptable offer. Because that still preserves that clannish approach to society. We have a responsibility, the Torah set this out, to do justice to those who are not in your family. That everyone is protected and guaranteed security under the law. To the extent that if we look in Hilchos Malachim Perek 3, you see the following. Now this did not exist in the ancient world. This is shocking. Okay, this is shocking. Here is one of the halachas Rambam brings down in Hilchos Malachim. We have already explained that the kings of Davidic lineage, Malchus Beis David, may be tried in court and people may testify against them. Thousands of years ago, the king can be called into court. This is novel. We accept that in America the president is one of the citizens, but a king? Think of the kings and the monarchies that ruled across the world forever. A king can be brought into court? Furthermore, the Perek 3, Pasuk 3, restrictions on the rights of kings not to hoard, not to take advantage of the people. He may only accumulate as many horses as he needs for his mounted troops. He is even forbidden to have additional ceremonial horses run before him, as other kings have. If he adds additional horses, he is liable for lashes. He is one of the people, yet there are halachas, of course, that protect his honor. There are laws of moreid v'malchus, a person cannot openly flaunt the will of the king. And yet at the same time, there's a balance between that and considering the king one of the people under, governed by the rule of law, like the rest of the people. This is a Jewish contribution. No question about it. It was novel. It was unusual. No society had ever established that type of thing before. And so we have brought to the world the concept of asos mishpat, to do justice to those beyond our family bonds. And yet at the same time, now we go further. Now we go further. Within this structure of asos mishpat, it still can lead to a great inequality and unfairness in society. Those that are more that are more manipulative or maybe sharper, know how to maneuver better in the world, they can take advantage of the law for their benefit and become very strong, very powerful, very wealthy. Some people are not so sharp. They get caught. I don't mean caught in a crime, but caught because they don't know how to use the law to their benefit. They're just not that agile mentally. They may be not as talented, not as physically able, haven't been blessed with talent to make them to do well for themselves. And so what happens to them? In a society that is governed strictly by law, they fall between the cracks. And the rich man defends himself. This is my money, and I made it legally, and I'm living in a magnificent palace, but I can defend every penny. It's mine. I have no, there is no responsibility that I have to take someone else out of their difficult situation. Even according to the Torah law, which governs tzedakah, we know that the law is a tenth. Beyond a tenth, a very powerful rich person can say, I gave my tenth. You cannot take me to court for not giving more because there happen to be other poor people in the world. I can defend everything I have. I earned it legally. I spend it legally. It's mine. And there can be created in such a rule of law a great inequality between those that are more capable and those that are not as fortunate, not as lucky, life has been hard to them, etc. And so the rule of law is not sufficient to govern a society and make it the kind of model society that that we're after. And so at first we say that the chesed that bonds us to our family must also be extended to the community. We generally link mishpat with tzedek. Lasos tzedek u'mishpat. Ohev tzedakah u'mishpat. To define what tzedakah and mishpat is and how they work together, there's a famous example. David HaMelech was a great and wise king, a tzaddik and righteous. So a landlord and a tenant come before him, and the landlord says, look, I'm renting my house on an agreement to this person to pay me X amount a month. It's been a number of months and he hasn't paid. I want the money. I deserve the money. It's my money. I have uses for that money. Even if I don't have uses for the money, it's my money. I demand it. The poor person, the tenant gets up and he says, I do owe him money. I can't. I lost my job. There was an illness. This happened. That happened. The crops all died. What do you want from me? I don't have the money. What's the law? So David HaMelech would paskin. You, tenant, must pay the landlord every penny you owe him, and here's the money to pay your debt. This is tzedakah and mishpat. It must go together. But what brings a person to feel the desire to go beyond the call of duty, beyond the miser of the 10%, beyond what they legally must do for the next person who's not as fortunate as them? What brings a person to have the love and the chesed for all of the others? As we said before, it's part of chesed, but there's another component. And that's the next category. Hatznea leches im Hashem Elokecha. To walk humbly with Hashem, your God. Now, When we speak about humility or privacy, to walk privately with Hashem, your God, we're talking about the fact that a person has a responsibility to their own soul. And this comes from the knowledge that Hashem has given them a unique neshama, as their face is not like anyone else's face. So their neshama is unlike everybody else's neshama. They are put here in this generation, in this particular country, in this city, born to these particular parents, given this particular upbringing for a reason. They have a job to do. And humility is the understanding that a person has that they are one among many. They're not, even if they are way more talented than everybody else around them, and they've made great contributions, they are not existing in a vacuum. They are one of many. There is a grand scheme, and they're playing their role. And there develops in a person an appreciation for everyone else around them and the role that they are playing, and the fact that they too have a unique neshama, and they too have been given a particular mission and journey in life. And a person begins to see themselves playing out a role, doing a job, on a mission from Hashem, as all others are on a mission. And he begins to see himself in partnership almost with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to live up to God's expectations of him. And to feel a bond to everybody else around them and their humility. And this brings a person to care about the other person and how well they're doing in fulfilling their mission, and how they can make it a little easier for this person to accomplish more, because we're all here. Hashem is expecting from all of us. We're all in this boat together. No one asked to be put in this boat. We were all thrown into this, of this particular generation. We're all born in this particular era. So here we are, and we're all in this city. No one filled out an application. We're joined together by the circumstances that are beyond our control. And we all see ourselves as part and parcel of one big plan. We say, tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Tzedakah. When we talk about pursuing justice, we're talking about going beyond the person's self and searching for tzedakah. Mishpat is established. It's demanded. Tzedakah, we always pursue. What is the difference between mishpat and tzedakah? You might say it this way, in the words of my father-in-law, Rabbi Zalman Wien. Mishpat is justifying yourself to the world. This is my money, and I made it, and it's mine, and it's legal, and I have no responsibility legally. You cannot pull me into court if I don't take care of the other guy, because they're unfortunate or they made mistakes. That's mishpat. I can justify myself. You can't call me on anything here. But tzedek is justifying the world to oneself, looking around and saying, look at what's going on, and do I have the capacity to do something here to make it better? Yes or no? And if I have the capacity, remember what we spoke about in Bereishis. The greatest accomplishment of any Jew ever in the hardest Nisayon was Avraham, and the Malach said, you did not withhold. Lo chasachta spincha, you did not withhold. When a person looks at the world and he sees the need and he has some ability to make an improvement, he has a responsibility not to withhold. But that comes from an awareness of atznei aleches, that I walk privately and modestly, humbly with God, because I see myself as part of a big picture. It is possible for a person to sin against themselves. There are two cases where the Torah describes a person as sinning against themselves. The first case is in Naso, Bamidbar, in Naso, Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Aleph. It's an interesting application of this idea. The Kohen brings a Korban Chatas for a kapara for the Nazir. Me'asher chata al ha-nefesh. That he sinned regarding the soul. Now, the pshat is that he got in contact with a dead body. But beyond the pshat, if we go a little deeper, chata al ha-nefesh, Rashi brings down, Rabbi Elazar kfar omer, sha-tzir atzmo min hayayin, he sinned against himself, that he withheld from himself wine, that he did not partake of all the opportunities and the brachas and the benefits that Hashem has given him. He has restricted himself. even that is called sinning against his neshama. Hashem has provided for us, sinning against the soul. Hashem has provided us many opportunities in life to be used for the benefit, and even to cut out, to isolate ourselves from a particular type of benefit. In this context, we're not going into Nasir, is called a sin against one's soul. The fact is here, a person is not chayiv if they harm themselves physically. Technically, Beis Din cannot bring you to justice if a person cuts themselves or harm themselves, although their body is not theirs, it's not their property. God has given it to them. Certainly a person is chayiv for committing suicide, but usually when a person is in that state of distress, we assume Hashem goes leniently with that person. We know by Eov, although he denied Hashgacha Pratis and he cursed the day he was born, we learn from the Gemara that a person is not held accountable for what they say when they're in such a state of distress. And we hope that Nebuchadnezzar, if someone is so distressed that they take their life, that Hashem doesn't hold them accountable. On the other hand, there are people that take their lives for other reasons, and they are chayiv for that. Suicide bombers, and many people take their lives for all kinds of aberrant reasons, and they're chayiv. So, but Beis Din cannot bring a person, as long as they're living, to justice and punish them for physically hurting themselves. You're not chayiv. But a person is chayiv, according to the Torah, for sinning against their soul, for not recognizing the potentials of their soul, the mission here in life, and not striving to accomplish it. The other case is Korach, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. After the 250 offered that fatal ketores and they were all consumed, the Pasuk says that he should go, and Hashem spoke to Moshe, tell Elazar, the son of Aaron, to go pick up all of the pans from the fire that after this whole episode. And as for these pans, es machatos, and he calls them hachatoim ha'ele benafshosom, as for the fire pans of these sinners against their souls. These people sinned against their own nisham, against their own souls, nafshosom. They were maybe properly motivated. They hoped for a way to serve Hashem more, to have a greater opportunity to serve Hashem. They're considered holy. They were considered people that died because they wanted too much closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Most people are punished for the opposite. You know, this is a sin that came from a great desire to be closer to Hashem than they were able to be. And yet they're called here sinners against their souls. So a person has a responsibility here to understand Hashem's mission for them, whether it's less than they wished it would be, with less opportunities, they wish they could do more, or to that Hashem has given them more and they refuse to take advantage of what Hashem has blessed them with and to use it for the good. There is a consideration that a person can sin against their own soul. And when a person is aware that they have a mission here, and so does everyone else, they develop a sense of humility, and they try to find not everyone else's mission and blame others and be critical of others that they didn't live up to their mission, but they spend their time trying to find their cause, their journey, why they're here. And they're very compassionate and they are very generous with other people's flaws and failures, because they have a sense of their own flaws and failures, and how can a person stand up and say, I have fulfilled my purpose, and since I have, then I can be critical of everyone else who hasn't. Anyone who's searching for their purpose knows that whatever they give, there's more to give. Whatever they've done, they could go further. And they apply this generosity to others, forgiving of other people. By the way, the notion of female tznius, and even male tznius, ties into this. Often tznius, modesty in dress, because we're not talking about modesty in dress necessarily here, but modesty in dress is often presented as a set of restrictive, irritating laws about that you have to cover this and you have to cover that and you have to cover this and you can't show that because other people have weaknesses, so you are responsible for covering this and that. It's your job. And it becomes a very oppressive type of restrictive approach to modesty. I believe it should be presented in a completely different form. When we think about tznius, we think about this. A person has a body and a person has a soul. Essentially, every person's body is basically like everybody else's. Here's a little bit of a graphic example. If you took 1,000 women, let's say white. Okay, there's black and white, but there's a lot of black people and a lot of white people. Let's say you took white people. 1,000 women. all undressed, okay? You took a picture of all of them lined up in a row, and you just cut off all the heads off the picture. Do you think you could find your body? Highly unlikely. A little taller, a little shorter. There's about a 10-inch range. There's a range of 100 pounds approximately, unless someone's extremely, you know, on one or the other extremes. Okay, you might have a birthmark here and there, but it's very hard. Basically, we're similar. However, if you took those 1,000 heads and you looked at all of them, you'd find yourself in a second, because our faces are not the same. So when we want to present to the world, when we want to know for ourselves who we are, it doesn't pay to look at the body. It doesn't really give us a sense of uniqueness. It's just like everyone else's. And it gets worse with age. It erodes as we speak. Okay? The body is certainly part of a person, maybe even can contribute to the person's personality. Yes, if a person's very tall and very beautiful, it probably does contribute to their personality. But essentially, there's the body, and then there's the face. The face is unique. The face is unique because it teaches us, as the Gemara tells us, that the neshama within is unique. If a person wants someone to relate to them, not for what they have, which is similar to everyone else around them, but what they have, which is truly unique and individual, in other words, their soul. If a person wants others to see them for their soul, how do they get others to see them, to see their soul, when the soul is invisible? How do you get a person to relate to you for your uniqueness, for your individuality, when the neshama is invisible? Well, the truth is that the neshama is invisible, but the effects of the neshama on a person is not invisible. Eventually, with time, even a person's face begins to reflect slightly, just slightly, a little bit of their neshama. Just slightly. It remains essentially hidden. The face is called panim, but that's the same word as panim, the inside, what is deeply embedded inside the soul. We say the eyes are the mirror to the soul. Chachmas Adam Ta'ir Panav. If there is a place on the body that a glimmer of the neshama shines through, it's the face. It's not the wrists or the knees. If there's a place on the body that a glimmer of the soul shines through, it's the face. And so the objective of Tzniyas is to bring the attention to the face, to the uniqueness of the person. The only way to bring attention to that which is truly human and godlike and special is to distract attention from the rest. And so we cover ourselves as a way of presenting, of revealing the uniqueness, the neshama of a person. When you have a magnificent gem to display, you do not find some complicated fabric with 1,000 threads, different color threads on it to put your diamond on. You find a simple black velvet, and that brings the eye directly to what you're trying to focus on. Tzniyas is about bringing the attention to the individuality of the person. And then when a person knows that they are unique, and they look around and surprise, so is everybody else, a person becomes humble and sees themselves as part of the big picture, and cares for each person and their mission and how well they're doing. And so the well-functioning society is structured on these three principles. First, the familial bond. Then the responsibilities to everyone else, the rule of law. And each relationship drags its governing rule into the next relationship. The love that is extended to a family is also extended now to Ben Adam Lachavero. It's not legislated, but it becomes something to aspire to. And the rule of law that governs Ben Adam Lachavero, which could be deficient and allow for inequalities, is tempered by the feelings of Hatznei Aleches, that we're all in this boat together. And when all of these three relationships are in place, it becomes time, it becomes possible to receive the Torah. And so the Balakeda says that first Yisro comes with Moshe's wife and children to establish the bonds of Ben Adam Lemishpachto. Then Yisro sets up a court system to establish the rules of Ben Adam Lechaveru. Then Hashem says, each man to himself, separate, prepare, cleanse yourselves, Shlosh Yismei Hagbala, all in preparation for the Torah. Notice, the time period leading up to Matan Torah, we start with Pesach. That's the familial bond. We spoke about that. Each man in his house, within the home. We move into Sfiras HaOmer, which is a preparatory stage. And what do we find ourselves commemorating during the time of Sfiras HaOmer? The lack of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro between Rabbi Akiva's students. This leads to Shavuos Matan Torah, the same pattern. We'll end with the idea that David HaMelech, in speaking and sending greetings at one point to Neville, says to him the famous statement, I wish you greetings, he says, and my greetings are Atah Shalom, Ubeischa Shalom, V'chol Asher Lecha Shalom. You shall be with peace, that's you, between you and yourself, Beischa, your home, Ben Adam Lecha Mishpachto, V'chol Asher Lecha, and all your possessions, Ben Adam Lechaveiro. We're always seeing man's involvement, encounters in this world in one of these three categories. And now the Jewish nation has for itself guidelines how to conduct ourselves within each of these categories. What are the governing rules? And how one category extends and overlaps into the other. And with this preparation in place, the Baal HaKedah says, now they begin to be ready for Matan Torah. This is all preceding the Torah. And so when we think about this parsha, we think about Matan Torah and Shavuos, of course, when we receive the Torah, I feel that these ideas give us a structure. We always do better when we know the structure we're working within. And we thank the Baal HaKedah of Yitzchak Aharonov for setting this out for us. And I wish everybody a wonderful week.